to Professor Harald Wallach. Professor Harald Wallach is a researcher in somewhere at the interface in between medicine, psychology, and consciousness studies. He was affiliated as a professor with Poznan Medical University in Poznan, Poland, and as a visiting professor with the University Wittenherdecke Psychology Department in Germany until recently. He's founding director of the Change Health Science Institute in Berlin and a freelance scientist and author. And please listen closely. He's author of more than 200 peer-reviewed papers, 14 books, and 100 book chapters. Professor Wallach was one of the authors of a scientific paper on a critical approach to mask use in children, recently published in JAMA Pediatrics. So, Professor Wallach, it's very nice to have you here. And I would have some questions to you before. We know, you know, that we have a second speaker in our meeting now. It's going to be Dr. Thoma, but he will come with his presentation later on. So it's just now, if I may ask you some questions. Basically, there are different kinds of mouth and nose covers. All of them were accepted as transmission blocking tools in certain episodes of the pandemic. The repertoire stretches from homemade masks of a medical
surgeon. Can I interrupt you?
Yes, of
course.
Can
I interrupt you? I cannot hear you properly.
I would like to repeat my question to you, Professor Wallach.
Yeah.
Basically, there are different kinds of mouse and nose covers. All of them were accepted as transmission blocking tools in certain episodes of the pandemic. The repertoire stretches from homemade masks over medical or surgical masks to FFP2, or also called N95, to FFP3, N99 mask. Could you please classify them in terms of protection or the ability to protect from SARS-CoV-2?
I'm not sure I can do that because I don't think there is very good data for that. I don't know many data, but I know a couple of systematic reviews, and they are all very doubtful about protection. There is a very good systematic review from Jefferson and the Oxford Evidence-Based Medicine Group. They looked at protection against flu virus, which is very similar to the coronavirus, and they have not really shown a lot of protective potency, except in probably high emergency measure situations. So I'm not sure there is really a lot of evidence for protection. There is a systematic review that was published in Lancet, which is also taking in a lot of non-randomized evidence, and that seems to show some protection, but then there are other reviews that are very doubtful about it. So I think the jury is still out. Do they really protect in normal situations, in everyday life situations? They probably do when you have a high viral load, say in a situation where there is a nurse or something dealing with a severely ill patient. But we are talking about community situations, and I'm not sure there is evidence for that.
We are all aware, most of us are aware, that you did a study. But before we come to the study, I just wanted to ask you, those FFP2 N95 in US masks are basically a tool to protect from dust.
Yeah.
And they are known and partially even labeled as not to be able to protect from viral transmission.
Yeah.
These products had always required a fit to carry examination by occupational health specialists, as well as, at least in Germany and Austria, a limit of 75 to 90 minutes of usage, mandatorily followed by a 30-minute break.
By a break, yes.
Yes. Does SARS-CoV-2 justify that all of these rules are put out of order?
Well, that is a very good question, and I'm probably not the right person to really reliably answer that. But to my knowledge of what we've heard so far and what I've read so far, I don't think it does.
We are all aware that the better the filtrating power, the lower is the exchange of air, resulting in an increase of carbon dioxide in the ventilation system.
Yeah.
Together with some colleagues and highly experienced technicians, you did an outstanding study on the effect of on masks on the carbon dioxide concentration in inhaled air in children. What was the result of the study?
Well, I've summarized. Excuse me, I just have to pick up that phone. Hello?
So now he's gone. This is real life. I mean, this is a live presentation with all the problems we could have. But now he's back. Thank you.
Sorry, that was my phone. That would have disturbed me. So I've summarized the study here on that little graphical abstract. It's actually a very simple study, I think, we did. We had 45 children, as you can see, from the age of 6 to 17. And they were fitted with either this normal surgical mask first and then followed by the FFP mask, or in reverse order, and the order was randomized and it was the randomization order was blinded. We did a baseline measurement of 3 minutes. Then children were fitted with one mask. And then we measured inhaled air for 3 minutes, exhaled air for 3 minutes, and joint air. In fact, the joint air was measured first, and then the inhaled, and then the exhaled air, everything for 3 minutes. And then we swapped the mask and did the same thing again, and then we had a baseline again. We measured with a measurement instrument that is designed for medical context, in that case for incubators, but we fitted it with a little hose, with a little tube that was attached to the nose and mouth of the child here with a flexible band, so it could be adjusted to the size of the head. So we were actually measuring what went into the nose and came out of the nose. And then we measured for 3 minutes only both types of air, and then we looked at only inhaled air, and that was done by a doctor observing the child breathing and pressing the button of the measurement instrument while it was only breathing in. So we accumulated air that was breathed in, and then we stopped again. You can see that sort of in this protocol here. So this is the baseline, then there was a break to allow adjustment for the measurement, and then there is joint air, then there is a break, then there is only inhaled air, then there is a break, then there is only exhaled air, then there's a break and the next mask comes, and this is oxygen. So then what you see is that we have a steep rise of carbon dioxide in the inhaled air from about 2,000 parts per million up to 13,000 parts per million. This is with surgical mask and this is with FFP mask. The post-baseline isn't in here because it's the same as the pre-baseline. And these are huge rises. And as these are the confidence intervals, the 95% confidence intervals, you can see that this is highly statistically, but also clinically significant, because as you probably know, 2,000 parts per million, this is 0.2 volume percent, 2,000 parts per million is the upper level of security or of safety, one should say. We have slightly higher values here because when you measure the child breathing, then you always will have a little cloud of exhaled air sitting around. So this is slightly elevated. We would probably have to subtract maybe 1,500 parts per million from these scores and values, but they're still very, very high. So what you can see is that we have exceedingly high values of carbon dioxide only after 3 minutes of measuring inhaled air. And I think that explains why in a large German survey, 68% of the children, and these were more than 25,000 children surveyed, 68% of the children have all kinds of problems, from headache to fatigue to irritability, problems learning, depression, etc.
I mean, interestingly, a few days after publication, JAMA retracted this publication.
Yes.
What was their official justification for that move?
If you look at the retraction text, the official justification is actually quite weak. It says they have doubts about the validity of the measurements, and the large public health implications. They also say they have done additional scientific reviews, which they have not sent to me, although I've asked for them twice. And I have actually answered all the questions that were raised regarding the validity of the measures, which are sort of understandable because we had only 600 words to publish and not everybody read the e-methods that we published. And even the e-methods were short and didn't contain all the information. So it's understandable that people had questions. But I answered them all. And I think I answered them in a way that nobody could say that there was still a validity problem with our measurements. But they didn't publish our answers. They were published on Retraction Watch, and they nevertheless retracted the study. Okay. It's now under review with another journal where we intend to publish the full version to preclude misunderstandings.
This is great. I would only ask the technicians now to prepare for the next speaker, but I have a last question to you. I mean, what you just now told, meanwhile, there is proof that publications, no matter which quality or whatever, which are against the mainstream opinion, are either rejected or even retracted by, I would say, especially highly ranked journals.
Yeah.
Would you classify that as censorship, or what does that mean for the future of medical science?
I think it's actually a breakdown of scientific discourse because there are very clear rules for retractions, and they're actually quite strict. So one rule is you have fabricated data or invalid data. We have not. I mean, you can doubt some of the methods. You can do that, but they are not invalid. A second criterion would be wrong analysis. That is not wrong. And the third criterion would be plagiarism, because you're publishing the same thing twice. And that is not what we have done. So strictly speaking, there is no real reason for retraction. They could have published all comments and my comments with them, and people could have made up their mind who is right. The editor could have published an editorial or whatnot. That would be the proper way of dealing with that. But it was not done that way. It was retracted, which I think is ethically wrong.
Okay.
And I see and observe that a lot in recent times.
Yeah, that's what I fear. Thank you very much for the moment, Professor Wallach. I hope you will join us in the panel discussion at the end of the session. Now I would like to switch to Dr. Thoma, who is now completing this the power of masks, this kind of conversation.